All right, so today we're going to learn about Sarah. You may know, or more accurately, go ahead, you're passing. And the Torah is eternal. So when we learn about Sarah, and we learn about Chevron, we're also going to answer the question whether or not we need a woman in the White House. Hang on to your seat. Second reading, Parshas Chayei Sarah, chapter 23, verse 17. So Avraham Avinu came to Hebron, and he made an enormous statement about the importance of Sarah. You know, he's ready to spend any money in the world. He spends the equivalent, maybe it's $4 million. I don't know, a crazy amount of money on a tiny piece of property, a very prominent and important piece of property. But as the Rebbe once told Rabbi Elberg, who asked the Rebbe, what was the eulogy? Maybe the eulogy was Shnei Chayesara, the wife. So the Rebbe said, he didn't have to say anything. He did. He spent all that money. That was the biggest eulogy possible. It was what he did rather than what he said. At any rate, there is a medrash that says that he said that he cited Eishes Chayel. I don't know why that wasn't in the conversation. But Al Kolpanim, clearly the Rebbe believed that the most important eulogy of all was what Avraham Avinu did for his wife Sarah. And after the negotiations are completed, and after Avraham Avinu gives the money to Ephraim, the Torah says, verse 17, Vayakom Sedei Ephraim, the field of Ephraim was raised. Asher b'machpela, the one that was in the Machpela area, Asher lefnei Mamre, which is before the Mamre, Hasada v'hama'ara, the cave, but it wasn't just the cave. Avraham Avinu brought the entire field, Asher b'y. V'chol ha'etz Asher b'sada, all the trees were included in the sale. Asher b'chol gvuli, in its entirety, the whole area, saviv, everywhere around, all of that was bought by Avraham Avinu. Now Rashi is obviously bothered by the word vayokum. What does that mean, vayokum? Vayokum literally means to get up. How can a field get up? So Rashi says, this has to be understood euphemistically. Why would the Torah employ a euphemism or a poetic word here? Why, what's... Just say, he bought the field. The field became his. So Rashi says, the Torah is trying to tell us something. Tukuma haisalei. The field was raised. Its profile was raised. She yotza miad hedyet. It had gone out of the hand of a commoner, liad melech, to the hands of a royal. And when it goes into the hands of a royal, the previous ownership is no longer relevant, meaningful, or important. Chapter 24, verse 17. So that's why it says Vayakom Hasada. That's why it says the field was elevated. V'hame'ora asher bo, in the cave in it, v'chol ha'etz, and all of the trees that were in that area, all of that was elevated. V'havraham l'mikna. As the Rebbe once explained elsewhere, clearly Avraham Avinu did not just buy a plot, but he bought a very important parcel of land. And this was like buying a piece of downtown, but maybe just a small area, but a very, very valuable small area. And when he bought this small area, he established a very prominent Jewish presence in one of the most powerful cities in the land of Canaan at the time, which is Hebron. So that's why it says, Tekuma Haisalei. Now, when a regular person buys a home, so people still remember, oh, so-and-so lived there before. You know, you have these historical homes, the McDonald home, or this home, or that home. It has a history. Who lives in it now? I don't know, but it has a history. Why? Because a famous person once lived there, or somebody had it before. But if the king or queen buys it, then it no longer gets called the house of so-and-so, now it becomes the royal home. And once it becomes the royal home, the old ownership simply dissolves, dissipates, it's not no longer has bearing on the property. And that, basically, is what Rashi is saying here with the idea of Tekuma Isolei, that the field is elevated. I should tell you that the Medrash Agada says that the field literally rose about a half an amma. Half an amma is like, about 3/4 of a foot. The field actually rose. And it's interesting, when you go to Maris Machpelah, you go upstairs. It actually is elevated from all the area around it. But anyway, that's what the Medrash says. You could take it or leave it. Rashi does not introduce that idea in Pshut Rishon Mikra. There are many Medrashim Rashi does find a need for it in the literal, most straightforward interpretation. This Medrash is not invoked, but rather here means euphemistically the field is totally elevated. It goes and it becomes Avraham Avinu's. Okay. What happens then? Verse 19, and after all of this, Kovar Avram es Sara Ishta. Then Avram buries Sara, his wife, El Ma'ora Samachpelo, El Ma'ora Stea Machpelo, the cave of the field of Machpelo, Al Pnei Mamre, before Mamre. So we really have a whole repetition, this verse, with coordinates given once again, a verse later. Hi Chevron, this is land of Chevron, the Eretz Canaan in the land of Canaan. This is a very challenging verse. I apologize, I skipped verse 18. Verse 18, let's go back for a second. Avram, l'mikne, for Avram was mikne l'eini b'nei ches, before the eyes of b'nei ches, b'chol boi shariray, for all the people who came into the city gates. Incidentally, the city gates, that's where people would gather. That was like the big, important, prominent area. Big business was conducted in the city gates. And if it interests you, a couple of years ago, the archaeologists are pretty sure they found the city gates. Very close to Ma'aseh Machpelah. Very close. Maybe 500 yards away. Maybe 700 yards. Very close. And they actually found the steps going down, and they're like 95% sure that this is the city, the gates to the ancient city of Hebron, and that's where this would have taken place. So the sale was finished, and Avraham Avinu went forward, and he buried his wife. And that's what we hear in verse, in Vilchol Ba'yishayirim, Rashi says, Bekerev Kulam, this was not a secret backroom deal, but rather it was in a very public manner. B'maymet Kulam Miknola, he gave it to him, in the presence of everybody. Everybody was gathered there. This was a major public event. It was covered by all the big newscasters. It was on Facebook Live and whatever else, whatever the other iteration of our time that you could think of going back to that time. The bottom line, the equivalent of all these things, that's how this was done. This became a big event that was widely known. Verse 19, which we just read earlier, Sarah, then, only then, Avram go and bury Sarah in Ma'aseh Machpelah. We get the coordinates all over again. The obvious question is, what is the purpose of saying the Acharechein Kovar Es Sarah Ishtei? What are we trying to say over here? So the Teferes Tzvi says in the name of the Medrash that Avram Avinu actually involved himself in the burial on a personal level. He himself buried Sarah, which is unusual, especially a very famous person. You have people who do it. They have undertakers. Avram did not allow anybody else. Avram himself buried Sarah Yemenu. So further to what the Rebbe said about the idea of paying top dollar, Avraham Avinu further demonstrated his love and his loyalty to Sarah Yemenu by burying her herself. Now, Hamik Davar says something interesting. He says something which was brought elsewhere, actually, that it's a cherpa for a tzaddik to be buried in a kever which is not theirs. And there's actually a discussion, the Mefarshim talk about this, when Yaakov Avinu said that he bought a kever. There's this idea of having a kever, buying a kever. And there's the discussion that you're not supposed to do that, and it seems to be a distinction between in Eretz Yisrael and outside Eretz Yisrael. Outside Eretz Yisrael, you shouldn't do it. In Eretz Yisrael, you should do it. Certainly the question of digging the kever, it seems that Yaakov says a shakarisi. Yaakov even dug his own grave before. And that certainly outside of Eretz Yisrael is not appropriate. But they maintain inside Eretz Yisrael a person could do that. At any rate, the point is, Avraham Avinu didn't bury Sarah, even though Sarah's there. I mean, it's like Kavod HaMeis. Should bury her right away, as soon as he agreed. No, Avraham Avinu waited not only until after the negotiations were completed, until the transaction was finished, it was ratified by everybody who was there. Only then was Avraham Avinu prepared to bury Sarah Imenu. And another thing we could also note is that this was an issue of getting everybody else's permission, so to speak. This was a municipal issue. As we go on and read after verse 20, Vayakam Hasada, re-emphasis again. The Torah emphasizes everything here twice. The field rose. The cave in it, Avram to Avram. It didn't just rise to his possession, but rather lachuzas cover. Everybody knows you don't rent a grave. A grave is a permanent thing, and this was me'ez b'nei ches, from the hands of ches. Avram Avinu totally removed it from their possession. So, why does the Torah have to emphasize vayakom hasada? The Bechor Shor says only after Sarah Imenu was buried was the transaction completed. This place formally dedicated. Because until then it was a transaction, it was an agreement. But once the burial takes place, that's permanent. That's it. Sarah Yemenu is in repose. That's the way it's going to be forever. And the Erd HaChaim says very interestingly that we have a discussion of business laws and transactions from a Torah perspective, that when a Jew is buying from a non-Jew, so kesef itself, just the exchange of money in and of itself, is not sufficient to affect the sale. But there also has to be something called a maise kinyan, or more importantly, chazaka. Kesef and chazaka. We have to have an exchange of money Now we have to have the assumption of ownership. So assumption of ownership would only be here when Avram actually used the field for what it was used. So when you buy a field for farmland, if you plow the field, that's assumption of ownership. If the field is fenced in, strengthen the fence, broaden the fence, that would be an act of ownership. Here, since it was being bought specifically for the purpose of a grave, when does it become an act of ownership? When did you use the field? When you used it for what you bought it for. So that's what the Torah has to say. Because the real tekuma, the real rising of the field, only happens afterwards. And it happened me'es b'nei ches, but it wasn't from b'nei ches, it was from Ephraim. Avram brought it from one person. This field was in one person's possession. Why would the Torah say that he bought it from b'nei ches? It actually makes no sense. It sounds incongruous. It's not factual. Avram buys it from one man, and you say he bought it from a whole people, a whole tribe. So the Medrash Seicheltev says something very important. He says that, firstly, this was a legal transaction, and there was an actual documentation. And for documentation, you need a court system. You need to have a magistrate. You need to have witnesses. You need to have a scribe. It wasn't just Avram involved. There was many people involved in this transaction, number one. Number two, based on this medrash, we could say that when you change the use of property, certainly in today's day and age, you need to get it ratified by the government. City council has to ratify it. It's a zoning issue, right? So there was like a zoning issue. This was center city Hebron, downtown Hebron, teeming with life. And all of a sudden, Avram moves in to Rockefeller Park, whatever you want to call it. You know, there's trees over there, and there's a big area, and a famous cave. And according to the way the Rebbe explains it, there was a big skyscraper, a tall building over there. Bayis v'ali al gabav. Because otherwise, it's describing a cave. Every cave has caves, one cave in another. Think Tora Bora. Everybody, you know, endless caves upon one upon the other. But the bias Ali Agaba, there was like a big home over there. There's a big building over there. And Torah emphasized the whole field. You need a whole field for one caver. Caver is 6 feet. You need 5 acres for one caver. Avraham Avinu bought this whole area. And he bought this whole area, and he decreed it. This was now, from now on, this was dedicated, consecrated, changed. The zoning was changed. Becomes a cemetery. This is the world's oldest Jewish cemetery. The place, the burial place of our patriarchs and our matriarchs. That's what happens on that day, and that's why it's me'ez b'nei ches. Everybody had to be in agreement. The entire local municipal council or what have you had to ratify it, and then and only then does the land fully transfer. And so we have the first parcel of land that becomes Jewish in Eretz Yisrael. All right, let's go on to some commentary. And we're going to answer my opening question. Do we need a woman in the White House? Let's see. Let's see what the Torah has to say. Page Reish Samach Gimel. The Rebbe's commentary here begins Simen Tez Zayin, Reish Samach Gimel, in Parshas Chayesara. Eretz Yisrael, he begins with a commentary on the land of Israel. Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, Huvtecha la'Avraham zman rav lefnei misas sara. This land was promised to Avraham Avinu a significant amount of time prior to the passing of Sara Yemenu. In fact, decades earlier. Va'Avraham af yishalech ba'aretz la'arka u'l'rachba. We learn that decades earlier, in fact, more than 50 years, half a century earlier, it's a long time, Avraham Avinu gets the promise, and Avraham Avinu, after getting the promise, which is after Lot leaves him, he goes for a sojourn of the land. He walks the land, he travels the land, la'arko la'rochba, in its length and breadth. And the obvious question that we had at the time was, why does the Torah have to tell us that? First of all, why does Avraham have to go around that? Because he can't find his place. Can't live in one place. Why would he have to be a nomad for? And why do you have to go all over the place? Find yourself a place and settle down. And Avraham Avinu, in fact, did settle down. He lived in one place for 25 years, one place for 26 years. So what do you mean he went all around? Most of the time he was actually settled. So the answer, the Gemara in Bava Kama tells us, and Rashi quotes this, is he did this kedei liknoisa, in order to acquire it. We talked about the idea of acquisition, that you have to not only exchange consideration, but also there has to be an act of acquisition. One of the acts of acquisition by which legally affects a sale is walking. You know, when I sell the chametz to the Gentile, so not only we have an exchange of cash, not only I give him the equivalent of a blank check for all the rest of it, or he gives me, pardon me, equivalent of a, for a blank check for everything, for the entire amount of money. Not only this, but when I sell him the chametz, I designate one of the rooms of the that's being sold, and that room, I give him the keys to it, and I tell him, walk back and forth to establish your possession over this. So usually I sell the chametz in my office. I sell Fahey's office. Because my office I sometimes go to. I don't sell my office. I sell that whole office. I don't go in there. I give him the keys to the office. And he walks back and forth and locks the door. So this idea of walking back and forth, that affects the sale. So the sale of chametz is a full sale. In order for this to be a full acquisition, if you will, going back now to the story with Avram Avinu, the Gemara in Bava Kama says Avram walked all over the land. After being promised by Hashem, Avram is walking there, being there, that established his possession of the land. So we're talking about possession that's been established some 50 years earlier. More than 50 years earlier. When we call Makkah. Le'hoya zeba ifin goli le'in kol. This was not something that was widely known. It was not widely acclaimed. It wasn't widely recognized. Avram Avinu knew this was like a private thing between him and Hashem. He knew that this land was owned by him. Nobody else knew about it. It was very meaningful, it was very holy, it was very spiritual, it was very special on some level, but on a practical level, it wasn't known in the city. It wasn't something that other people knew about. V'adarabba, not only it wasn't known about, but Oysa's man at that time, Haknani, af his chazek. The Canaanites arrived in this land at the same time as Avram Avinu did. The truth is they have no more rights to it, but ancestrally, this land belonged to Shem, the son of Noach, as they divided the Mesopotamian basin up in three, the whole Eurasia was divided in three, and Shem had a certain portion, and Cham had a portion, and Yefes had a portion, and this is part of the Semite land of Shem, and Avram Avinu was a very prominent descendant of Shem. That's where the term anti-Semitism comes from, which is kind of funny because a lot of other Semites too, but we became known as the Semites. We represent Shem in the world's eyes. So these are Canaanites who are Chamites, not Semites. The Chamites came from North Africa and they conquered Eretz Yisrael. At the same time, Avram Avinu arrives from Iraq in Eretz Yisrael because Iraq was also in the land of Shem. But Eretz Yisrael and Iraq are really very close to one another, the real Eretz Yisrael, but much, much bigger than the sliver we have today. So Avram Avinu moves in and he's a Semite and this land is promised to Shem. It's his family's land. But the Chamites come at the same time and they come in large numbers and they come with a tremendous amount of military prowess. And under duress, the locals leave. We don't hear about a war, but under duress, they leave. The Kanani establishes his position there in a very, very strong way. The seven Canaanite tribes settle there, and they make this their land. As it says, that's a direct quote from Rashi, that he was going, they were conquering. Slowly but surely, they ousted the family of Shem from the land. The only one who was left was Shem himself. And his Dam Digur is Malkit Tzedek, and he lives in a city which is called Shalem, which you better know as Yerushalayim. But other than that little village called Yerushalayim, or Shalem, and Malkit Tzedek, and a few of his people, nobody else remained. All the other people who remained, they were not Semites anymore. So one second. Avram Avinu comes to the land of Canaan at the same time as the Chamites. The Chamites get stronger, and Avram Avinu has some mystical, spiritual, perhaps even legally meaningful transfer of land. But in the practical, real world, right here on earth, in everyday life, nobody heard about Avram Avinu, at least not as the owner of the land. He may own the land before God's eyes, but practically speaking, the Chamites are here. The Canaanites are establishing their presence. When does a portion of Eretz Yisrael legally, formally, publicly, actually become Jewish land? Here. Sari Meir is buried. Dafke letzeir of Sarah was for the need of Sarah. Lichvoida, for her honor. Hechela lehismamish ba'alusya shel Avram Avinu ala aretz. That we begin to see an establishment, a practical unfolding of that theoretical ownership. Kishekona, when the field is purchased. Shnei Efron asher b'machpela. Hamokim harisha, in the very first place. Shavram rochash b'poyel u'begole. Avram Avinu purchased. Actually, not theoretically, actually purchased it. ubegoli and openly le'eni kol ha'amim in a manner widespread and public v'nepach ha'makim shel hedyet le'eretz Yisrael. At that point, it becomes formally transferred, and then there's a transformation. The transfer of land affects the transformation of mundane, ordinary piece of land into sacred soil, the land of Eretz Yisrael. This is when it happens. Sari Yemeinu was the cause. The Rebbe says, Hasibu l'kach, the reason that it's Sari Yemeinu and the needs of Sara that bring about this change, this is kshura, this is directly linked be'echad ha'evdelim ha'klolim, one of the general distinctions bein ish le'isha, between the male and female dimensions. Ha'ish, the man, mitivay, by his nature, meruchak, he is not directly involved in the kind of home that he lives in. Who sets the stage for home base? Who makes it the kind of home it should be? The woman is the one who nests. The woman is the one who creates the atmosphere, the environment, the kind of home that they live in. This is, it is the woman who actualizes the theory. The husband could theoretically want to live in a warm home, an open home, a cold home, an indifferent home, whatever it's going to be. But practically speaking, whatever his wife decides, that's the kind of home it's going to be. Okay, divri chazal, like the words of our sages. And the Torah, my dear friends, remember, is timeless, not something which changed with the vicissitudes of times and societal shifts in attitude or perspective, but the Torah's ideas are eternal. And if the Gemara says this, then the Gemara says it, even if we don't have men going out to the field and nobody's grinding wheat or even baking bread by themselves, this becomes euphemistic of life itself. This is a paradigm. Ha'ish mevi chitim. The husband, the man goes out to the field, he brings home wheat. If you try to eat wheat, not wheaties, wheat, can't eat wheat. Eini mukhanas lachila, it's not edible. Who makes the wheat bread? Who makes it edible? Ha'isha mechina mehem mazan roi l'maychol. Everybody does their role. V'nimtza me'ira einav u'ma'amidasi araglav. So this is a quote from the Gemara in Yevamos. What happens is, his eyes are illuminated, he's established as a mensch, as a person. So in other words, who sets the tone? Practically, ha'isha. Lefi zeh yesh lefarash gam es lashon chazal. According to this, we could also explain a fascinating statement which is made in the Tanit Ve'Elio, which is the collection of teachings from Eliyahu HaNavi, that it says, Eliyahu taught, Ezeu isha ksheira, the word kosher does not mean holy, it does not mean blessed. What does it mean? What does kosher mean?
Touched.
No.
Correct.
Suitable. Appropriate. Appropriate. Prepared. Mukhshar is a person who is talented, capable, able. It's about capability, ability, something which is ready for something. So if something is prepared for a particular use, you say it's mukhshar. It's now prepared. It's kosher. Kosher means suitable, ready. It's appropriate. So what's an appropriate wife? What's an appropriate woman? That literally translates, or perhaps mistranslates, as she does the bidding of her husband. The Rebbe explains that's not what it means. Ha'isha hi ha'meviya es etzayim baila l'deasiya b'poyel. Oyser etzayim baila means she makes that will. He has will. He has many desires. Sure, it remains in the heavens. He has the theoretical desire. I want this, I want that. Okay. He wants to take till tomorrow. What happens? What she decides to happen, that's what happens. That's the idea of the ideal partnership. He could have the ideas, he could have the vision, but he has to have a wife who's going to translate that into action. He's going to bring it down in a realistic way. That means oyser, making the etzayim baila, from the theoretical to the concrete. Hadavar nochen gam beruchnis. This is also true on a spiritual level. Ha'ish mitivei meruchak v'nivdil manyan elam. If men would actually follow their inner calling and nature, they would be a little bit aloof. They would be a little bit removed from the comings and goings on a practical level. It's dafka ha'isha hiya mikasheres bepeilus ha'lekus emelam agashmi. In the spiritual mission of the Jewish people, it's specifically the woman who's tasked with the mandate of bringing godliness down to earth. It's not the woman is her main task is to actualize Judaism. Judaism remains theoretical. Without Jewish woman, it's a theoretical Judaism. With Jewish woman, it's an applied Judaism. So zeh atam, this is the reason. Avram kishal atzmei lehigshim is balusei. No surprises here. Avram Avinu got the mandate. What do you do about it? Basically nothing. Sara nudged him. She tried to get him to act. He couldn't even get him to kick Ishmael out. Even barely. Hashem had to intervene. Avram had to follow through and do what Sara said. But Bedafka b'schus Sara. Now Sara is no longer here. Avram has no choice. Now, under the, so to speak, the force of Sara's presence and the Sara's needs, this becomes actualized. Not the theoretical ownership of Eretz Yisrael, but the actual establishment of a Jewish presence, a legal presence, a public presence, a concrete presence, that the actual land is vayokam, the land is elevated and raised, sheyotzam liad hedleit, hedyet liad melech. Incidentally, in the light of all this, when another question is answered, why is the parsha called Chaye Sara, the life of Sara, when Sara Imenu is only, she's only discussed in the postmortem? She, her death is mentioned, her burial is mentioned, and her replacement is talked about. Rivka, the next matriarch. He could not find a greater oxymoron to call a parsha that discusses the death, burial, and replacement of Sara Imenu. You couldn't find a better name than Chaye Sara. And the answer is that tzaddikim are even more alive after their terrestrial lifetime. And when did Sara Imenu's vision, and when did Sara Imenu's spirit and practical application of all these ideas finally get unfolded? When did it finally happen? When was it concretized? In the passing of Sara. That's Chaye Sara. That's the life of Sara. So making this a little bit timely, do we need a woman in the White House? The answer is absolutely yes. Does she have to be a president? Not necessarily, but there's got to be a woman. Whether she's the first lady or the president, there's got to be a female influence in the White House. I heard that Melania is staying home in the White House in New York. I don't think that's a good thing. I don't think. I think that the president's going to need to have a woman to tie him down to reality instead of flying out there. And the influence of the first ladies over the years, I'm just using this as a frame and example, has been at times enormous, and sometimes we don't know about it. And some of the best presidents were good presidents, largely due to the influence and the inspiration of their wives. I think like Nancy Reagan, that's me as a kid, that's what I grew up with. She was an enormous influence in the White House. So do we need a woman in the White House? In the Torah, it says most definitely. For the house to be a proper house, for it to become a home, you need to have a female influence. The Eibush does a helfen that all those people who have missions and mandates to do great things should do great things, and that Yidden should only have Besudas Tevis. And the most important thing of all is that Mashiach should finally come. And talking about Mashiach and talking about Jewish monarchy, you should know the Gemara says, Melech b'lei maternis alav malku. A king without a queen is not a king. The idea of the female influence is enormous. It's enormous. The Rebbe did not allow shluchim to go out single. All the shluchim were only sent out married couples. The Rebbe didn't send a man, he sent a couple. Because it's only when you have both influences that you're able to have the mission accomplished.
So did Abraham have to buy the rest of the land too?
Did he have to buy the rest of the land? He wanted to buy the rest of the land. Did he have to? I don't know. He bought much more than he had to. That's the point. That's the point. This is how Eretz Yisrael was established. It wasn't just a grave. It was a whole ancestral land that was bought. It was an estate. Machpelah estate.
Right, but what about the rest of the country that he walked across?
So the rest of the country he walked across, Moshe Rabbeinu passes on and hands it over to Yeshua, and we arrive in Eretz Yisrael. And we take it by force. But a piece of it was actually accomplished. Chaim.